performances by the most extraordinary exhibition ballroom dancers anywhere. And the best, of course, was Jerry Lester. With giddy anticipation, the young ladies, dressed, as they then said, to the nines, would wait near the entrance for Jerry to arrive. He was more than handsome. He was dashing. Wavy brown hair, roguish mustache. But the magic began when he danced. An indistinguishable blend of music and sensuality. With a series of eager and accomplished partners, he soared through grand waltzes and torrid tangos. Every element in place, even the expression on his face, even the look in his eyes intensified the spell. And at the end of each number, my, how they would applaud. And he had other talents, including a romantic singing voice that rivaled the finest of his day. But Jerry Lester's first and best love was ballroom dancing. And to see him dance, they say, was utter enchantment. And then, remarkably, dramatically, Jerry Lester lost his hair. All of it. The mustache included. Not his talent now, his hair. And the loss was a blow from which he never fully recovered. Certain his substantial charisma was gone forever. He eventually became depressed, even drank too much. He wore a hat in public to salvage what little he believed was left of his sex appeal. Not even a string of marriages could rescue his self-esteem. His health was failing now. A stay in the hospital revealed extreme hypertension and retinal bleeding, exacerbated by a perilous weight gain. And then came the strokes. At first, a relatively mild stroke. Nonetheless, it found Jerry still recuperating after more than a year. The second episode, actually a series of strokes, put him in a wheelchair. Doctors contemplated everything from spinal surgery to a Spartan diet of boiled rice and apples, but there was nothing to be done. A third cerebral hemorrhage put Jerry in a sanitarium, and the fourth killed him January 18, 1952. He had lingered in deteriorating health for nearly 6 years. He was only 48. Yet let's not let it be forgot that once upon a cloud there was a remarkable dancer, a dashing young man who Samson-like lost his hair and then everything he loved. He lost his hair to scissors and a razor at the urging of his brothers, who had somehow talked him into joining their vaudeville act. For generations now, the world has loved to laugh at the fast-paced antics of a comic trio called the Three Stooges, and especially at the outrageously funny brother of Moe and Shemp, the bald one, nicknamed Curly. But today you have just learned that before the ultimately silly clown called Curly Howard, there was Jerome Lester Horowitz. Jerry Lester, the prince of the Triangle Ballroom, a picture of incomparable suavity and grace, gliding like a ghost through the nether light of the glittering mirror ball. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. And we have two local treasures in studio right now. Kevin Kester and Steve Arnold of the California Cattlemen's Association. We're going to be discussing state and federal legislation, updates, and updates impacting Slo County cattlemen, importance of cattle grazing in preventing wildfires and carbon sequestration, and challenges and issues faced by our local and state cattlemen. Steve and Kevin, welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad you're here. So call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So let's do some self-introductions here. Let's start with Steve. Tell us about yourself, Steve. What don't we know about you?
Well, you know a lot about me. I'm pretty high profile with my wife and all the things that she does. But I'm fourth generation in downtown Pozo, California. Mm-hmm. We run cattle, beef cows, cows, calves, farm a few wine grapes, and do some dry land hay. My son and daughter are involved in the operation, and I've got four granddaughters on their way. So,
well, and you know, in your bio, you mentioned some really, legends of cattle, the cattle business here that you learned from over the years. One of the things that I really miss is the temple is Hoover's in Templeton.
Yeah, well, I was really lucky in my lifetime as I dropped out of Cal Poly to take a job on the La Panza Ranch, and I was out there without a horse trailer. Mm-hmm. My wife and I were just married, and I learned a lot from the guy that was there right ahead of me, but I got serious education at the Templeton Livestock Market with Dick Nock for quite a few years, but Kevin and I, this is a big time cattle country.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been fortunate to have known most of them.
Yeah, I'll bet. And Kevin, tell our audience a little bit about you and your ranch.
Sure. My family moved into this area in Homestead in 1867 in the North County here. And we've been out in Parkfield area, northwest of Paso Robles here for the last 80 plus years on our ranch. I represent the fifth generation of ranchers here in the North County, and married with my wife, June. We have three grown kids and six grandkids.
And the kids are working the ranch with you, right?
I have a son that's on the ranch now and another daughter that lives here locally and helps out, and then one daughter, youngest one's in Texas.
Wow. And Steve, you're the current but outgoing president of the California Cattlemen's Association?
Yeah, I'm the lame duck.
I've got
until December 1st, give or take a day or two.
And Kevin, you were the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association a few years ago, weren't you?
Yeah, so in 2018, I was National Cattlemen's Beef Association president and then California Cattlemen's president back in 2011 and 2012.
I lived in Denver for 8 years. I never knew that, and my office was just about right across the street from the Brown Palace where they used to, do the national stock show and auction off the bull.
Yep.
And I never knew that it makes sense to me now that they have an office in Denver.
Yeah, right outside of Denver in Centennial.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, one of the things that the three of us have in common is we've both spent a lot of time doing grassroots advocacy for our state trade associations. And as I mentioned earlier, before we got on air, I got sick of it around 2010, 2011, because it was just not any fun anymore. And you weren't really what's the word I'm looking for? It didn't seem like we were making any progress. So we were really starting to slide backwards on our issues. And it was because we weren't really working with people who knew anything anymore. What do you think caused that?
Term limits.
Yeah. And jungle primaries.
All of the above, yes. And we were talking about that prior to coming on air. And, it hasn't worked that well for a lot of people. One thing about the California Cattlemen's Association, we have a dedicated staff of two, really, that watch Sacramento really, really closely for us. So as members, Kevin and I don't have to be there all the time, although we're there a lot of times. So,
actually, you were there last week doing some testimony to the California Department of Agriculture. What was that all about?
In 2019, the industry producers passed an initiative to extract a dollar a head called the Cattle Council. Dollar a head comes out voluntarily. If you don't want to pay, you have a refund capability. But it has been used for advocacy for any number of projects that actually help the producer. So the 5-year time limit was up for renewal, and either it goes back to the whole producers to vote again,
mm-hmm.
all of them, or we can get the board at CDFA to go ahead and okay it for another 5 years. So that's what we were trying to do. It's a lot of effort, as you probably can imagine, to go through another vote because it involves all of the industry, dairy,
mm-hmm.
feeding, cow-calf producers.
So how did it come out?
Well, that's not been announced yet unless Kevin knows, because he's actually on that council.
Okay.
They told us it'd be a couple of weeks, but there were relatively few negative letters, and they were all there via letter. The 5, 10, 15 of us that were there were all positive. So,
can I ask how much money is raised through this dollar ahead?
Dollar ahead, it's somewhere around $3 million. But, you know, with the cattle numbers declining and still declining, that's obviously going to take a little bit of a downturn. But, yeah, $3
million. And this goes for ag education?
It goes for producer education.
Producer education.
You know, we have, for instance, we have a group, RTAP, technical advisory, that in the event that you have a problem on your ranch, like we have to report pond capacities and fullness now annually. So if you have troubles with those kind of things, they're guys to call. They help you. They can send you to the right place. That's been really popular for a lot of reasons, not just the ponds. But yeah, it's all fun. We started a foundation, and I'm sure Kevin was on the bottom floor of that at the California Cattlemen's Association, that we're able to take that money from Cattle Council and send it in direction. So we use it for a lot of things, media, governmental affairs, contacts, where we can take the legislators on to the ranch for tours, which has been hugely popular. So we're just getting those kind of things rolling. It's 5 years, and we've probably had really good traction for the last 3 years. So it took 2 years to kind of get it up and running. And
how do you guys get, I was noticing some of the legislation from this morning's newsletter, and it's always like there's always something from some guy in L.A. or some guy in, a legislator in L.A. or San Francisco that knows absolutely nothing about agriculture, trying to pass something like a green bill to make your lives more difficult. How do you deal with those types of situations? Is it your professional staff up there that'll go have a visit with the legislator and try to educate them a little bit?
Yeah, we have a dedicated staff of two lobbyists, a registered lobbyist for California Cattlemen in Sacramento, plus a few support staff in addition to that. But they're there every day. And so, to your point, these urban legislators get their constituencies telling him certain things that they would like to see enacted in the proposed legislation. And so there's normally not any will ill to these proposed bills out of every 2,000 to 3,000 per session in Sacramento. And so we have to educate, and that's what the Cattle Council funding can help do with that $3 million per year, is help educate legislators on what we do at the ranch, because there's less than 2% of the population in the United States that are involved in agriculture, and less than 1% are on ranches and farms. So you got 99% of the public that doesn't really understand what we do for a living, and so it's a lot of education ahead of us.
They just think a steak comes from Costco, right?
Yeah. Milk's made in the supermarket.
Yeah, unbelievable. I was going to ask you a question, and I just forgot what it was. But let's do a lightning round of state and federal regulations and legislation. That's what I was going to ask you. So the budget has been passed, I guess, up in Sacramento, it's about ready to go to the governor. Is there anything in there that is bothering you guys as far as cutbacks? Will this impact you, the cattlemen, at all?
Yeah, the wolf funding that's been taken care of, I see you have that on a different topic.
We'll talk about wolf in a
minute.
That's gone. So they got rid of the funding for the wolf pack management? Okay.
Well, for the depredation, to pay to the producers for depredation, presence, et cetera.
Okay, so we might as well talk about that now. So you got this gray wolf pack management. The wolves are going after the herds.
Yes.
And so there was up until now some sort of compensation if you guys lost cattle, and now they took that away.
Yeah, confirmed. Had to be confirmed, and it's a confirmed depredation by the CDFA, California Fish and Wildlife. But that was $3 million they allocated in 2019, 2020. and maybe even 21, but it was gone at January this year. They utilized it. So they didn't
add it back into the budget.
No.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the budget's in
a mess.
Turmoil, but yes, yeah, so they have not added that back. That doesn't mean that there isn't some sort of funding available, but I don't see that coming. So
how bad of a problem is this?
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad if you're in Siskiyou County.
Yeah, it's getting worse all the time. They just have a confirmed PAC identification in Tulare County this past few months, and it's just a matter of time before we actually have wolves over here on the Central Coast.
And you're not able to take them out because they're, what, an endangered species at this point?
Yeah, if you do take them out, you're liable to go to prison.
Really?
It's federal and state laws against that. So, yeah, even if you see a wolf in the act of killing a calf, you're not legally allowed to do anything about it.
So are they protected by the feds or the state or both?
Both.
Both.
Both, yep.
Wow. So that is really would need an act of Congress to take care of this problem.
But I'm not sure that federal depredation is not possible. It's not possible for us to depredate in California because it supersedes. Because other states have wolf problems also.
Mm-hmm.
And they're mostly governed by the feds. And
okay.
I think they, like Wyoming, I think they can take care of their problems if they need to.
As normal, California leads the way in being more restrictive in any capability on environmental issues. And so we don't have the choice. Where federally, like Steve was saying, we do have the right to depredate if we see somebody causing harm to us. But California law prohibits that.
All right. Well, so let's talk about some of these lightning round issues. What about beef production and prices? What are you seeing now? Where are we at? I saw something that, you know, prices are holding, but production is contracting.
That's a fact.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's how it works, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what business you're in, it's universal business.
Yeah, right now in the United States, we have the lowest beef cow herd since 1962. The absolute numbers. We're down at 28 million beef cows in the U.S. So demand has risen, and even at the high beef prices at our supermarkets right now, our U.S. Demand and our worldwide demand has stayed really strong, which has kind of surprised me, actually. So we're in a good spot as ranchers right now for cattle prices, and knock on wood, if we don't have any foreign disease outbreak or something unintended come in, we're in pretty good shape for a few years.
And again, I think we mentioned this, we talked about this a little bit in our prep about, you know, I hear on what is farming today on KPRL about the bird flu problem.
Well, yeah.
That's not a cattle issue. It's more of a dairy farm, cow issue, right?
Yeah, as of right now, I actually sit on a task force with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on the safe beef supply, and I've been on two conference calls with the two principal investigators at the U.S. Department of Agriculture on this avian flu outbreak. And right now it's in dairy herds. It's now in 12 states, and they've got positive results in over 100 dairy herds in these 12 states, and it keeps increasing. And what is worrisome to me is how much the scientists do not know about the virus. That's what it is. It's a bird virus. Now they're thinking that the spread within the dairy industry is actually from the transporting of mostly cattle, some people carrying the virus on them to other states and other locations. So why it hasn't infected the beef part of the industry, I don't know, and the scientists don't know, but we'll take it because it's not a good thing if we get it.
Yeah, what's the impact of this on the dairy industry?
There's not a huge impact right now, per se. The infected dairies, obviously there are. Cows, it's a virus, a flu virus, and so mortality is extremely low, very, very low, but they'll get sick and milk production goes off, which hurts the dairy guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they have to worry about. And then, you know, they have to contain and vaccinate and get rid of the virus within their herds. So it would be a real pain for the beef industry, but what it affects our markets, because with the futures markets, our futures investors don't like uncertainties. And so when there's uncertainty about diseases, then it drives the top of the market prices down for some period of time.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll just have to keep an eye on it. Hopefully Dr. Fauci's not involved with this this flu, huh? Anyway, I couldn't resist that one. Okay. You know, I know my friends in the propane business are wrapped around the axle, so to speak, on the ban on propane-powered forklifts. Is this going to impact the cattle business?
It's going to impact everybody.
It's going to impact everybody. Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't... I'm old enough to remember when all the houses were electric and, you know, that turned out to be a disaster.
Yep. Yeah.
So, you know, that there's just no easy way for agriculture to meet that. You got outdoor forklifts that need, you know, you need on the ranch there that they need some power. It's going to be difficult.
And all new vehicles and light duty trucks are required to be all, you know, sold in California, all new ones to be all EV by 2035. Mm-hmm. 50% of the commercial, the 18 wheelers, same thing. And so it's, and then you read all these articles now where the power grid isn't set up to even have that capacity. So we're in a bind. And I think the politicians, as we get closer to these deadlines, politicians are going to realize, oh, we made a mistake. And unless technology advances really quick on the batteries and EV stuff, they're going to have to back off this because it's be a disaster for us.
Well, I hope they're paying attention to what happened in the European Union and those elections over there, because that's usually a precursor of what's going to happen here.
Right.
And that is one of the issues that the people in Europe were really unhappy about. So, and again, I mean, one of the other times, when I was looking up this whole fleet thing, supposedly... wasn't there something that was supposed to go into effect in January? Oh, well, we got our bumper music coming up about the Port of Long Beach and all only taking in electric trucks or something, but they keep buying diesels because they can't, because the electric ones aren't working. It's a nightmare. Okay, when we get back, we're going to talk about the National Farm Bill and some other important items with Steve and Kevin. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Russian President Vladimir Putin in North Korea for a summit with dictator Kim Jong-un. Fox's Alex Hogan.
The two leaders are expected to discuss Russia's need for weapons in the ongoing war in Ukraine and North Korea's need for technology and economic assistance.
It's the first time in 24 years Putin has visited North Korea. Women would be required to register for the Secret Service under one proposal being considered for the National Defense Authorization Act. Some Republicans not on board. Fox's Mike Emanuel.
Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley is not a fan, writing on X, quote, "I'm not voting for any defense bill that forces my daughter to register for the draft. Not now, not ever." Texas Republican Congressman Chip Roy also reacting on X, quote, "You can go straight to hell."
Now, currently only men are required to register for the draft within 30 days of their 18th birthday. America is listening to Fox News.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Steve Arnold and Kevin Kester of the California Cattlemen's Association. You can call in with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about the National Farm Bill that's now pending in Congress. Anything good coming out of that?
Yeah, we need the Farm Bill in agriculture. It has passed the House of Representatives. The U.S. Senate is sitting on it because the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee, Senator from Michigan, she doesn't like a lot of the stuff that's in the House version, the Republican-controlled version. And most of the money's over dollars. And what for food nutrition in the future, most people don't realize the Farm Bill is just about 80% of supplemental nutritional assistance program, which we used to call food stamps. It's the SNAP program. And so 80% of those dollars are for that, of the trillions of dollars over a five-year life of the Farm Bill. It's renewed every 5 years. So Republicans made a few minor adjustments to not have as big increases. Mm-hmm. There's no cuts, just not as big increases. And the Senate Democrats don't like that whatsoever. So it's stalled. We don't know when or if this year it will be passed. It could be delayed until the next Congress next year. And so that would not be a good thing, because for ranchers like us, there's a conservation title in the Farm Bill, which funds our programs with the Farm Services Agency and the National Resources Conservation Agency. There are conservation programs and other funding programs for farmers and ranchers, and as well as trade promotion authority for our exports across the world. So a lot of very important programs for farmers and ranchers in the U.S., and without that Farm Bill being passed, there's just people are left out in limbo and not knowing what the future is going to bring for financing and how they're going to conduct their operations.
I was interested when we spoke last week about, you know, the fact that, I mean, so much of the bill does go for all the food programs for the poor. And that's a strategic move on your part, on the cattle business, you know, on the agriculture's part. Tell the audience a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, so there's been discussion in Washington, D.C. in the past whether agriculture should separate and just make the Farm Bill an ag bill and have the food stamps and SNAP programs go to other agencies. But what would happen and be bad for the ag representatives are that we would have no leverage, because almost all of Congress, Senate, and House representatives in Washington are urban or non-ag folks that don't understand a thing about it. So having that leverage of being able to get the votes for food assistance really helps us on the Farm Bill. That's why we want to keep it joint together.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question?
Yeah, I had a question. You know, when I went to Cal Poly, I was an ag major, and I used to make extra money by repairing fence and doing errands for Alec Madonna. I also worked at the Green Gate Farms out there for Jay Stream.
Right.
And time Wayne Newton. I met Wayne Newton a couple times. I'm just curious, did Alex, what happened to, I go by his property now, and I don't see any Angus out, bulls out there, or any Angus cattle out there. Did he get rid of those, or, I mean, the family get rid of those?
Herefords.
Yeah,
number one.
Yeah, Herefords. Yeah. Red, white with horns. Yeah, I think they have them anymore.
Yeah, he had some Angus because of one of the, I got in trouble a little bit because of, I went out there and fixed the fence, and then one of the Angus bulls tried to get out of the fence and tore it back up. And Alec was a real nice guy. I liked him. He'd come every day when we'd be working. He'd bring his coffee cake and a thermos, and you'd think I was being, he's being nice, and he is a really nice guy to me. And he's always a nice guy, but the thing was, he's always out there checking on you, too. So, as he said, one of those bulls gets out again, Mike, that's going to be your hide. And I said, they're not getting out, so I built that fence so strong, and they're not getting out again.
Well, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. So, one of the things that I heard actually the chairman of the Congressional Agriculture Committee, a guy from Georgia, on the radio, and he was talking about the food security measures within the National Farm Bill and how important they are. Could you unpack a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, that's part of the funding on for the U.S. Department of Agriculture to have their inspectors out and their programs for food inspection, and also overseas inspecting products, ag products, before they leave countries to come into the U.S. on our imports. So a case in point, and I had talked about it with under the Trump administration, Secretary Sonny Perdue, Ag Secretary at the time, We were down in on a trip with National Cattlemen's to our counterparts in Paraguay for a week. And that's a high foot and mouth disease area. And so coming back through customs in Miami, I declared where we'd been. I had my boots bagged, tried to show them to an ag inspector, just waved me on through. And if I would have been a food terrorist and wanted to create economic harm in the U.S., what an easy way to go. And so anyway, I complained to the secretary about it in person. And just things like that. We have to have a strong food security, and the Farm Bill provides that with the funding.
Well, and speaking of terrorists, I heard another report last week that all this illegal immigration coming up through the border is creating food security issues with the farmers and ranchers along the, you know, the border. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, yeah, I've got friends along the Arizona, Texas, and New Mexico border, and they live in fear each and every day. They have to travel armed 24/7. Illegal immigrants break into their barns, their homes. They steal equipment, steal vehicles. Anyway, it's a dangerous situation for both the illegal immigrants in the desert, especially in the summertime, as well as our ranchers and farmers along the border. They have to steal for stuff, and then the cartels are involved, and it is a mess. You see it on the news. Yep. Some networks carry it more than others.
Yeah.
And that's even just the tip of the iceberg, even as bad as some of that reporting is.
Well, yeah, and are we getting any of those impacts up here? Are you guys seeing any of this kind of stuff happening up here, or are we still been pretty safe in the county?
I don't deal with a lot of labor, hired labor, so I can't really answer that question.
Yeah, Ian Parkinson would be the guy to ask that one, because he has all the intel on that.
Well, I need to get him on again soon anyway. So, but yeah, that would be interesting to know. And the other big issue is this traceability issue that you guys are grappling with. What's going on with that?
Go ahead, Kevin.
So in 2013, the U.S. Department of Agriculture created this traceability rule. And at the time, we're kind of getting into the weeds for non-ag people, but identification on the cattle for traceability is for animal disease traceability. It's for disease, not marketing. And so you could put little clips in their ear. The USDA had the numbers registered. And so what's happening now is that they're transforming into the current era of electronics, and we're using electronic identification. And so the visual and a little button in their ear for radio frequencies. And so that's the difference. We can't use what they call these little bright tags. Those aren't valid anymore, probably come the end of this year. And so we have to use radio frequency identification, where you can wand it going through alleyways and find out where that animal was born and raised, just right, you know, in a laptop.
You can see why that's important, because you got to catch everyone by the head to read the old tag in the chute.
Okay.
Where they can be five cattle wide in just continuous flow down a working alleyway or something with the electronic reader.
So it makes it easier.
Speed of commerce. Yeah. Yep.
Speed of commerce.
It's one of those technology things we're going to talk about here.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right. And then finally, another topic here was apparently there's huge demand, and you mentioned it a little earlier before, from overseas for
right.
beef. So what's that? What is that looking like? What's driving that?
So what the driver is, in the last 4 years, U.S. beef exports across the world have exceeded $10 billion a year, which equates to in value to about 15 to 20% for every steer and heifer raised in the country. And so it's a big chunk. That's a significant part of, it's our profit center of being a rancher. It's our export part of it. And so South Korea, Japan, in the last 5 years, China, and then Mexico, Canada, and Taiwan are our six largest export markets. And so it's really important. And the reason why they love our beef everywhere in the world is because we're essentially the only major grain-fed beef country in the world. and the taste and flavor of our beef products going overseas is everybody loves it, and they're willing to pay a premium, especially on cuts where in the Pacific Rim, like short ribs and variety meats that the U.S. consumer won't pay much for, like tongue, for example. It's a premium in Egypt and across the Pacific Rim. And so it's a value added for us ranchers back home. We can make more money per carcass. And so it's really important for us to keep our export markets healthy.
Is it possible to ramp up your production in the production in the United States to accommodate more of that demand, or from a United States perspective, are we pretty much maxed out on what the number of cattle that we can raise every year? You could raise,
probably.
Yeah,
I don't probably. I mean, there's California is starting to open some of the public lands again because they realize the benefits. Secondary mm-hmm. benefits that they get from grazing, but there's endless possibilities, I think, in the cattle industry.
Well, what's exciting is that our genetics are improving so quick with technology and genomics, mm-hmm. and so today we're producing more pounds of beef in the U.S. with more than a third less cows since 1977. We've increased efficiency more than 35%, And now it's escalating really fast because of all sorts of technology and the genetic issues. And so we're limited physically per animal because of droughts across the country and space. There's less ranches all the time because of conversion of ag ground. So, but technology can maybe keep us to where we can supply the world with safe and nutritious beef.
So that leads us to the next question, the important role of cattle grazing in reducing wildfires. Are you making any progress there as far with the state in particular?
Yes, surprising amount of progress, but it took those disastrous fires, catastrophic fires, to really bring that discussion back to the table over the last 5 years. But we, other than the wolf, we work really, really hard in Sacramento on ensuring the capacity to control burn, other fire, noxious sprays and other things. But that's probably our second biggest lobbying effort is wildfire resilience.
And again, the state's trying to limit. Obviously, the state wants to have more now because of the fires. But the environmentalists, of course, are reluctant.
Yeah, and that's not all sectors of ag think it's a good idea either. For instance, the grape industry, they don't want controlled burns from, May to October, mm-hmm. which the state really wants to burn in the spring, like right now, mm-hmm. while they still have a chance. So, yeah, there's a lot of pushback even in the general ag industry. So
that's interesting. Yeah. And then what's, explain to me again what this carbon sequestration thing is and how is it different? How is it different between, again, beef cattle and dairy cattle?
Well, a couple of things. A typical dairy is a confined animal operation. And so a typical beef cow ranch is not. We're just ranches grazing on grass. And so you have manure issues on dairies to where you have to control the emissions. And so there's a lot to be said for that on how to do that for sequestration on that kind of things. So I sit on an advisory committee for an NGO, and some of our clients are world-class big food companies, and they're trying to figure this thing out. There's kind of a common saying that it's kind of the wild, wild west when it comes to regulations or lack of regulations for carbon sequestration and the parameters on for food and agriculture. So for ranchers like Steve and I, there's not a whole lot of research to date on how to properly or to quantify what we know we're doing on our ranches for the good things for sequestration of carbon. But they have the science behind it to where we can tell the public and our lawmakers what the good job we're doing. So We're getting research projects started right now on rangelands across the U.S. And then in California, locally here on the Central Coast, we have annual grasses as opposed to the Midwest and other places where they're perennials, the native grasses. And so it's a different, the rooting system and everything were completely different. So we need a lot of research to be able to prove how good our ranches are for the environment for sequestration between our trees and grasses. We do a lot of good. We just don't have the way to scientifically
quantify
show it yet. Yep.
Okay, that's interesting. That'd probably be a whole new show, you know, just talking about the technology behind all that. So I know you have a mid-year meeting coming up here, and property rights is a big topic. You want to talk about what's going on with property rights?
That's always a fight.
Yeah.
You know that. For us trying to maintain our abilities to run our ranches, you know, there's any number of regulations coming down the pike all the time that require some education for our producers. So, yeah, the mid-year meeting is next week, actually, a week from tomorrow. But we'll have all the discussions we've already had today, the bird flu professional CDFA head veterinarian that's in charge of bird flu in California will be there, and the wolf will be prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the wolf's concentrated mostly at this point in Northern California, and those guys are pretty touchy about the wolf, so that's going to be... I tried to get him to let me lead the wolf discussion so I could kind of keep it tamped down, but
yeah.
You just don't know what you're going to get in those things. So,
yeah, absolutely. And did this Supreme Court decision, what was it, last year on the waters of the United States, has that helped you guys at all?
Yeah, so that was a Sackett decision, and so it does help us. It's not a complete cure-all for ranchers, for what delineates the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency of jurisdiction on vernal pools or little spots of water during the wintertime on a ranch. But it goes a long ways to getting rid of some of the Obama administration ambiguous rulings and how they interpret the regulations. So it helps a lot, but we still got a ways to go.
Are there any other property rights cases coming out of the Supreme Court before the end of the term?
Not property rights.
Yeah. Okay. I get stuff from Pacific Legal, and they're involved in all that kind of stuff. All right. Real quickly, we probably have a couple minutes now and a couple minutes after the break, but let's talk about that technology. I was fascinated with your use of drones. And how you're using those on your ranch, Kevin.
Right. So we initially, my son Cody and I, we purchased a couple of commercial drones, and for the purpose of looking for people, as in marijuana grows in the more remote parts of the ranch. And by accident, through using the drones, we found out they're extremely beneficial to use for moving cattle, whether it's our cows and calves or our stalker steers. They hear the sound of the rotors. There's four rotors on each of the drones, and they make a little noise, and it doesn't spook them to where the cattle run, but we can send a drone line of sight several miles, and we got video machine going on it in a screen, and we can gently move cattle across a canyon where it would take us hours, literally on horseback with dogs, to get around and get the cattle and move them. We can efficiently do it through drones and move cattle for great distances. Each battery is about 30 minutes, so we have an array of batteries. We can move a lot of cattle very efficiently.
All right. Well, listen, I hear the bumper music coming up. When we get back, I want to hear about satellite sensors for well monitoring. And then I'm going to ask you one closing question, but I want to hear from both of you because I really admire what you guys do. So stand by, and we'll be right back, folks.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending higher, with both the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notching new record closes as investors focused on softer than expected retail sales numbers for May and commentary from a batch of Fed officials. Tech gained today with chip makers leading the charge, shares of AI darling Nvidia jumping over 3% and hitting a new record close, and edging out Microsoft to become the most valuable publicly traded company in the world. While shares of Micron Technology rose over 3% as analysts boosted their price targets on shares of the chipmaker ahead of its earnings report next week. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Home Depot, and Amgen. The Dow decliners, United Health Group, Boeing, and McDonald's. The Dow rising 57 points. The NASDAQ up 5 for its 7th straight record close. S&P 500 up 14 for its 31st record close of the year. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Something amazing is happening in education. Students are inspired and engaged. That's because school districts consulted with CDW, who designed modern classroom solutions with pre-configured HP devices, making learning more accessible, secure, and immersive. Now when students study topics like elephants, it feels like elephants are there with them. HP and CDW, make amazing happen. Learn more at cdw.com/hppsg.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Hi, I'm glad you could make it.
Wow, your house looks amazing.
Thanks. We just had our whole house painted by Peak Painting. They even refinished all of our cabinets.
They did a beautiful job. I really like the colors.
They had their in-house designer help me with my color selection. The whole process was so easy. You should have them do a free estimate at your house. Just go to peakpainting.com to book an appointment. That's peakpainting.com.
I'm pulling it up on my phone right now.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peakpainting.com.
Painting services come with a 9-year labor and materials warranty. Some exclusions apply. Contact peakpainting.com for details. That's Peak Painting, peekpainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Kevin Kester and Steve Arnold of the California Cattlemen's Association. Next week's show, I have not completely confirmed my first half hour guest, but I'm trying to come up with a really cool interview for you guys, and so stay tuned for that. But on the full hour, I have the pleasure of having a Professor Lee Ohanian. He's a professor of macroeconomics at UCLA and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. He was on the show, I want to say, 6 months ago. He's very insightful. I'm going to be asking him about all this insanity going on college campuses, as well as maybe I'm going to ask him. He actually advises the Federal Reserve, so I'm going to ask him some questions on the Federal Reserve as well. So that'll be a great show. Again, we still have a few minutes with Steve and Kevin. What else are you doing? I mean, you've mentioned the genetics that's having a big impact on the agriculture community, the cattle community. What about these sensors for well monitoring? That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, so we have a couple different technologies we use satellites for. One of them is for our water tanks, located out on the ranch several miles from anywhere. In the summertime, when we have cattle out on these watering systems, we have to drive them each and every day. And so with the satellite technology, we can put sensors in the water tanks and or water troughs if we choose. And every minute on your cell phone or your PC, you get the updates on what the water levels are. So it saves you from having to use up fossil fuels and damage the environment by driving around unnecessarily each and every day. And then for moisture sensors into the ground on our farming side of the ranch, in our vineyards, we monitor the soil down to 54 inches every 6 inches, to where we can see where the water flows when we're irrigating, so we can be very precise on how much water we want to put into the vineyard and save money and water.
Are you able to measure the actual savings or the financial impact of the technology?
Oh, sure. Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. All right, before I ask you the closing questions, Aunt Joanne, Steve's aunt, Joanne Arnold, Switzer, wanted me to mention that you've got Cattlemen and Farmers Day at the fair on July 18th, and then the Cattlemen's Dinner. And I went up to my first Cattlemen's Dinner last year at the fair. I couldn't believe how many people were there. You must have like 1,500 people.
They did.
That was amazing. Just amazing. So, folks, you can get those tickets on the California Mid-State Fair website. And I think they're already for sale. So
you want
to do it. What are the proceeds for that go to?
Do you know?
I do not know.
We may have
it. The pay for the dinner.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a benefit.
So I think it's not.
It's not a fundraiser.
No.
Oh, okay. It just pays for the cost of the food.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a fundraiser.
Oh, so here's my, I'm going to start with Steve. And this is the closing question. And then I want you to, Kevin's going to get to answer the same question. So why is your ranch and ranching important to you? And why is this way of life worth preserving?
Well, if you haven't ever lived this way of life, then you probably wouldn't understand why it was important. I don't know. It's all I've ever known. And it's all, you know, I enjoy being alone. I don't have a problem with that at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, conversely, we're here where Kevin does way more than I do. But I also understand the importance of connecting in the right spots governmentally and everywhere else to keep us where we want to be. But yeah, I just grew up with it, and I'm not going to get out of it.
What I just think one of the best parts of San Luis Obispo County is the whole ag community and the whole feel of being here.
Yeah.
What about you? And I got that question from the video that I saw on the website. So I'm going to let you wrap up the show with answering that question.
Sure. So as a representative of my family being the fifth generation on the ranch, it's important for my kids and then now my grandkids, which potentially represent the seventh generation, to continue those family traditions and the way of life, like Steve was talking about, of being out with Mother Nature, working with animals, and being able to sustain food and feed the world. And so it's important also for the general population to keep our wildlife and plant habitats intact and open space intact. It's good for the environment. It's good for our society, and it's good for our families.
Yeah, well, that's a great answer, and yours was good too, Steve. So, I mean, I think it's hard to leave. One of the things that I saw about I was involved with that Hidden Creek project, and the guy just didn't want to leave his ranch, mm-hmm. and that was really the message there for him, and I kind of feel I call my property a ranch, but I'm not a rancher. But I couldn't really leave it. You know, I understand what it's like being out and, you know, out and not having a whole lot of people around you.
But that's, some generations don't have a choice, and that may be in our future, maybe in Kevin's. I don't know. But, you know, if you're lost all interest in your kids are gone.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things you don't know.
Well, you're lucky you have your kids involved. And
yep.
And how old are your grandkids?
So youngest one is 2, the oldest one is 9.
So you're going to have to be around for a while to bring them along.
Yes, I'm just glad Melissa didn't hand me a card on her way out when she saw me.
Well, and again, we didn't bring up the whole notion of composting. We'll get that on another show. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure, and I think I'll run into you again very soon.
Thanks,
folks,
Chris.
We'll see you next week on Protecting What Matters. Have a good week, and take care.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Temple.